Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. It is Sunday, March the 15th, 2015. Getting ready for Mount Madonna. We're having our retreat. We begin with Prima Donna, our little kind of joke. Tomorrow, we'll begin at 9:30 tomorrow. We had a workshop yesterday here at the Unitarian Church in Monterey, and we always love being there. It's a wonderful place to be. I hope sometime you'll join us. It's a great place to meet, beautiful facilities, and even more importantly, a chance to understand the nature of your life beyond the, well, the common mediocrity of our minds, all of us. And I work very hard with my students and those of you who can come to look at a bigger picture of life. And that's what I offer. I want to remind all of you that this radio program, as well as the TV programs you see on the website, as well as the commentaries, podcasts, and video casts that I offer, everything here on this website of aspire.org is done, made, and created due to the loving hearts and the loving hands of my sponsors. Without their support, without their kindness, without their compassion towards humankind, you and I would not be sitting here in this situation, me talking to you and your questions and all the important things that you ask me. And I want to thank my sponsors, and I want to thank those of you who take the time to ask questions. It's very meaningful to me. Let us go to the first question. This question is by Tom. That's it, Tom. I had to move down on the screen here. I'm sorry. Does a spiritual practice help with everyday life, like taking away ugly people in my life and or making more money, making my life easier? Tom, if anything, a spiritual practice in the beginning makes our life more difficult. Much more difficult. That's why very few people can enter into it. I am not going to sit here and lie to you and tell you that you're going to have brighter teeth and a fatter wallet and more people, Tom, coming to you wanting to be with you, and all the ugly people will be gone and all the quote-unquote good people will be there. This is a pedestrian mentality that most people just absolutely adhere to with all of our heart and soul. They don't seem to understand the bigger picture of life. So, Tom, how do I approach your question? How do I approach helping you here and taking this question a little further and a little deeper? We're not here to have a great life. Not in the way we think of it. To us, a great life is to eat, drink, and be merry. And for the most part, that's all we care about, is to eat, drink, and be merry. We never see much of the bigger picture or what our life is really all about. We don't even care about it. What we want to do is just have as much fun and good times as we can before lights out. Now, you know, not everyone is like this. My generation is totally different than yours. I don't really know how old you are, but by the sound of your email, I would imagine that you're in your 20s or 30s, and you're thinking in terms of how you want to, shall we say, have a better life, do better in your worldly life. Doing better in this worldly life is not what's important. What's important is to understand the nature of yourself in this world, in this life. And what are we totally doing here? What is this really about? Tom, stop. Ask yourself, what am I doing here? Don't ask, why am I here? What am I doing here? Really look at it for a moment. What is this life experience showing me? What is it really all about? most people just shrug their shoulders and say they don't care, or they have an answer for it that is comfortable to their domestic personality and their pedestrian mentality. And that's the way they live. No deeper, no further, no more. They don't think they have to. Some people admonish the whole idea of religion, philosophy, and politics and all that, but we all have our own religion, philosophy, and politics, don't we? Even if I say I'm an atheist, then I have a religion. If I say I don't believe in politics, then I am sure I do in some way because I'm subject to it and I just don't want to admit it. So we all have our ideas, our ideals, our rights, our wrongs, our goods, our bads. We all have this stuff that we get involved in that has nothing to do with the meaning of our life and the true purpose of our living. So you ask me, does a spiritual practice help with everyday life? It depends on how far along the path you are. If you're just beginning, it looks like mishigash. It looks like craziness. It looks like absurdity. It looks like a foolishness. It looks like only idiots would do this. And that's the way we think, and that's the way we live, and that's the way we are, and this is the way we go about our living. We actually think this way. A true spiritual practice goes beyond the ideas and ideals of what is kind of, shall we say, appealing to our emotionality. If you look at it, Tom, everything we do is about emotion. Everything. We're just really dealing with our emotionality. We see a situation, we have a condition in our life, and we deal with it emotionally. We see it emotionally. All of us do. Now, how far do I take it in my emotionality? How far do I go with my emotionality? How deeply do I believe in my emotionality? Well, that is something that is really quite foolish. Because if I go into my emotionality, I miss everything. I miss right and wrong, good and bad, how foolish that is, and how silly it is to think in terms of right and wrong, good and bad. I miss it. I think it's good to do that. And I start believing in it. You ask me, does it take away ugly people? What if I'm the ugly people? What if you're the ugly people we want to be removed from? Maybe the ugliness is not in others. Maybe the evil is in ourselves. Maybe the ugliness is within me and I'm projecting it on other people. How about that? And this thing of making money and making life easier. What is it that you're really searching for, Tom? Some elixir that is going to make this a lot easier and a lot more, shall we say, proportionately advantageous to your insecurities, your greed, your fears? What are you really looking for? If you only look on the surface, you will miss everything. Everything is subject to impermanence, Tom, everything. And so nothing stays the same for very long, and then it disappears, it goes away. If you really wish to understand the nature of your life, if you really want to understand what it means to be in this life, you have to have the patience to go through you. There is an old Zen story that is so very true. The master and the disciple are walking along. And the disciple says to the master, "Master, why is the spiritual path so arduous, so long?" And the master smiles and says, "Because it must go through you." If I want to make this a very difficult experience, I will do it because I make it go through me as Gregory. I make it go through his mind, his beliefs, his attitudes, his values, all the stuff that he thinks makes him me. And when you're tired of me and you're done with the me part of your life, then, and only then, Will the spiritual path make some sort of, shall we say, sense to you? You will start to understand it for what it is. There is more to this life than just thinking in terms of right and wrong, good and bad, and wanting solutions to the problems we've made, all of us. You and I came into this world via our own karma. We came into this life because this is the only one that would be open to us. It's, shall we say, in sync with our karma. And now you see what living haphazardly does. You see what living a cavalier life might be all about. And you want it changed? Well, the mechanism that brought you here is the same mechanism that's going to take you out and do it again and again. But if you wish a deeper experience, a more authentic one, one that has something to do with what is beyond the me mentality, then you're going to have to be selfless. Your question, Tom, is anything but selfless. And that's the issue of your question and the answer to it. When you choose to be selfless, that is when something meaningful is going to happen to you. I hope that helps you. Hope you were able to stand back a little bit and not get insulted. Everybody gets insulted. Please forgive me. Namaste. We all get so easily insulted. We ask big questions. We ask, sometimes people even ask the right question, but in doing so, they kind of get their butts kicked. Next question comes from Chris. He does not tell me where he listens to us from. Are you saying that Christ said, hate your parents? I read one of your commentaries about this years ago. He could not have meant that. He could not have said that. Did you make this up, Chris? Well, Chris, you can look it up on the internet, for goodness sakes. It's right there. You can read it in all four or five versions of the Bible. I didn't make it up. I'm not that bright. I don't do things like that. I wish I could, but I don't. I mean, really? What good would that do either of us? So you're offended by Jesus here, huh? You call him Christ. Christ is not his name. It's the state of his consciousness. And that's improper. And I love seeing ministers and everybody, Christ this, Christ said that. Christ doesn't say anything. It's a state of being. Jesus spoke from the Christ, not as the Christ. And people are just so, I don't know what you guys are. I don't know how you live with yourselves most of the time, but this is not the way, okay? You have to understand what we're dealing with here. Jesus is a very interesting master, much less a very complicated man to most people's tastes. So we have pared him down to where we can deal with him with our pedestrian mentality. And that's about as far as we've gone with him. So it doesn't go very deep with human beings. Trust me on this one. So Chris, Jesus said, if a man does not hate his mother, his brother, his sister, even his own life, his mother, his father, he cannot be my disciple. What the hell, huh? Who'd have thought? Now, do you kind of agree with Good Friday? They should have strung him up and killed him. I mean, what's the most important thing in our culture? Family. Family. And people believe God made the family. So it's God, family, and country. Because the country is what supports the family. There was this propaganda on the Super Bowl. They had this family standing there in this square. And I think there were four of them, father, mother, and brother and sister. And then all of these people from the armed forces standing around them and getting bigger and bigger, all these different parts of the armed forces. And the quote went, before they get to you, they have to get through us. Oh, good. Really? What we don't seem to understand is that because there is a you, a family, there is the need for the us. And it's just ridiculous. How we live is formidable to our stupidity, our own stupidity. It just is so ridiculous the way we live, but who can talk people out of it, really? Who can do it? I'm in the minority here. Yes, Jesus said what he said. But you have to understand, in the Aramaic, the word hate means to put away. Not like we believe it to be, like a vengeance, a hate, an anger, you know, that kind of thing. It's not that. A fervent kind of emotional side where we want someone done away with. No. He's saying, in your priorities, in your life, don't get all emotionally attached. It is only due to our heredity, our genetics, our DNA, that we become emotionally attached and preoccupied by this attachment to our life. And thus we make our living a matter of this kind of stuff, where we are living according to what we believe our families dictate to us. And when family is more important to me than love, when family is more important to me than moving into love through compassion and loving kindness, then we have a problem. And if you look at Jesus, he had many times betrayed his family, many, many times. At the wedding feast, when he told his mother that he wasn't going to have anything to do with her, when she said, go get some vino. We're running out of vino here. You know, boy, can't run out of the wine. The wine in those days was used as a sacrament, as a way of good luck, as a way of prospering and sending off the couple to do their, you know, genetic dance, which is to copulate and make babies, which we've never gotten over. I don't want to get into that, but that's was the purpose of marriage, is just for having children. I'm not going to get into it. I promised myself when I took your question, I wasn't going to get into that stupidity. And I'm already into it. See how easy I am? God, no discipline whatsoever here. So, yes, what he was saying is you get a lot of your values, a lot of your pain, a lot of your sorrow, a lot of your genetic tendencies that you will enact, dear Chris, from the point of view of your heredity. So a lot of our mischief and our misunderstanding about the meaning of our life comes from that. Hence, we go into the world and we do some pretty odd things, things that are pretty uncomfortable and ugly. And we just keep it going and going and going. And we never think in terms of stopping it. Never. Because it's family, and family's everything. And family is like, you know, 007, the license to kill. So we can do whatever we want there. That's not what Jesus is teaching. He's saying you have to love your life. You have to love this thing called your life more than you love these people who you think brought you into this life and make up your life. Now, when I say love your life, I'm not talking about your circumstances and your conditions. I am not talking about situations in your life. Life is not situational. I'm talking about loving life, feeling it for what it is, to see life within you, to recognize its origins within you, and then to live in that life in totality, in compassion, in love, in care, in the willingness to see the bigger picture. That's what I mean. And so life is love. And when you can see that life and love are synonymous with each other, that is when you will start to fall into life as love and fall into love as life. And this is a very big thing. This is something that will take you into many beautiful aspects of daily living. What can I say to you? Yes, he said it. And Chris, you need to look it up. And you need to understand it for what it is. The only thing that is important is to put love ahead of everything. And what good is your family anyway if there's no love in it? Really, what good is it? It isn't. Oh, Chris, I could go on and on, and I've really tempered this. You ought to see what's going on within me right now. But I hope it helped, and please forgive me. Namaste. Oh, you people and your families, you think they're everything. I watch people clan up. You know what I mean by clan up? They get their clans together and they take pictures of their family and put them on Facebook. And you look at them and these are the people who are going to go into the world and do absolutely nothing but rape, kill, and pillage the world in many different ways. Like just taking all of the resources and never giving back, never thinking about putting love ahead of emotionality and all that. And all the damage they're going to do. Because they are ignorant, like their mommy and daddies were, and are, and remain, and do. Hey, Sherm? The last question is from Raymond, and he listens to us from Florida. That's nice. He asks, why are loving people, such as Jesus and others we have seen, persecuted so? Raymond, in the Beatitudes, Jesus states, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And it's funny you should bring this up because this came up at a discourse recently that I offer every Saturday at the Cherry Center that you can come and listen to, but you're far away. We live in a world, in a culture, in a society that has nothing at all to do with love. It has nothing to do with the meaning of life and the love that exists within us. Absolutely nothing at all to do with that. We live in a culture, a land, an earth, where the kind of souls that are drawn to this are much like the Dark Ages, much like Civil War era. And these souls that are brought here or drawn back into this thing called Earth, which is really a beautiful place but has been made to be very ugly, these souls continue on without learning and maturing. They can't hear love. They don't want anything to do with love because they're too busy hating, using hate as love, using fear as love. So everything is about their hate and their fear. And nothing can ever, shall we say, move towards love, migrate towards love. So when you hear a Gandhi, or you hear some politician like Jack Kennedy was, or Bobby, or someone who is standing up and saying, hey, let's get sober here. Let's take a look at ourselves. Jimmy Carter would be one. I'm using contemporaries. Sadat would have been one of them. Anwar Sadat. There have been many in our contemporary time who have edged towards all of this. Dr. Martin Luther King, obviously. Big one. Big one. So you get a little closer and you get a little closer to it. We have these people who dare to talk about things that we don't really want to talk about and take a stand we don't want to take. We dare to hear them. We dare to recognize them. But their message is not cohesive to hate and fear. And because it's not cohesive to hate and fear, the common pedestrian mentality, we kill them. We don't know what else to do with them because their message is so penetrating and so deeply disturbing to our psyche, our mentality, that there's nothing left but to kill them. So we do. We just kill them. And that's the end of that. We don't want to think that that's true, but it is. And it is as much my fault as anyone else's that this happens. Gandhi said, we must be the change we wish to see in the world. That probably killed him. And he's right. He is absolutely correct. So Raymond, instead of wondering why the persecuted are so persecuted, try it out for yourself. Do something very kind, out of the box, nonsensical. Something that is very important to you that you feel should happen or could happen that would help other people. Just do it and watch what your friends and relatives think of you. Maybe go into a spiritual practice and watch how they think of you. You are a nut. You're a flake. You're a navel gazer. You're a fool. Really. And anyone who participates in hate and fear, they're normal. They're good people. Yeah. Well, there you are. And that's why things are the way they are in this world. And I can't change them, and neither can you. You just have to be true to your heart. I'm out of here. Thank you for listening. And Raymond, thank you for your beautiful question. If you have a comment, a question, or something I can be of service to you, and you don't mind being insulted too much, give me an email. It's at the top of the page at aspire.org. Hit contact. Have a wonderful, wonderful Sunday. I'll be back with you next week. Please, please forgive me, hey? Please? Namaste.